This is the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins, your voice in Washington, D.C. on the issues of faith, family, and freedom. And now, here's your host, Family Research Council President, Tony Perkins.
Hello and welcome to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Coming up, Pope Francis spent a few days here this week in Washington, D.C. He spoke on the importance of family, protecting the unborn, religious liberty, but climate change was also a major part of his focus. What do members of Congress say about that? The chairman on the Senate Committee on Environment and Public Works, Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe, weighs in on that, and the failed vote in the Senate to defund Planned Parenthood that took place this week. Also, the Syrian conflict continues. We received word this week that Russia has sent 28 combat planes to the area. It's no secret that Russian President Vladimir Putin wants to be more involved in the Middle East. The question is, what does that mean for the United States and for Israel moving forward? New York Times bestselling author and Middle East expert Joel Rosenberg is here in studio. That's coming up here on this weekend edition of Washington Watch. Let me encourage you, visit the website, TonyPerkins.com. You can find out more about today's topics, our guest. You can also find out information about No Fear, new book out just about 2 weeks now, Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth. If you've read the book, I would encourage you, I would ask you to write a review, to kind of put the word out there on the book and its impact. We'd like to get this in the hands of lots of young people so they too will be affirmed in their stand for their faith in Jesus Christ. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Well, as I mentioned, this week the Pope was in town and speaking on a number of issues, but as he addressed the joint session of Congress, he also addressed the issue of not only life, not only religious liberty, but the issue of climate change. Now, the Pope throughout his time in the U.S. used his platform to promote his thoughts on the environment, which seems to be right in line with the president. Now, also on Thursday, the Senate failed to pass a bill that would defund Planned Parenthood. And the surprising aspect, seven Republicans joined with Democrats to block that bill by a vote of 47 to 52. Joining me now to talk about that is Oklahoma Senator Jim Inhofe. Senator, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Yeah, nice to be with you, Tony. I'm not sure I agree that he wasn't strong at all when he talked about this. He never used the term climate change or global warming. And I can tell you right now, the liberal Democrats that were sitting there were very disappointed in him. Now, when he talks about avert the most serious effects of environmental deterioration, well, you got to keep in mind that goes back into the 1990 Clean Air Act amendments. And just look at our situation, what a success that was. And that was done through action in Congress. The energy consumption has increased by 47%, population has grown by 53%, and yet the air is much, much cleaner than it was before those amendments. So, you know, to me, my interpretation of that had nothing to do with climate change.
Let me read you a quote. I would play the clip, but his English is a little hard to understand. He said this morning before the joint session, "The common good also includes the earth. A central theme of the encyclical, which I recently wrote in order to enter into dialogue with all people about our common home. We need a conversation which includes everyone, since the environmental challenges we are undergoing and its human roots concern and affect all of us. I call for a courageous and responsible effort to redirect our steps and to avert the most serious effects of the environmental deterioration caused by human activity." End quote. Is he talking in vague enough terms that people on different sides of the issue can interpret them how they like?
You know, he's done this, though, in a lot of areas. If you look at some of the rest of his speech, when he talked about the death penalty, he said to protect and defend human life at every stage of its development. What does that tell you? That's clearly the fetus he's talking about. And yet... when you listen to the other side, they just kind of blush over that because all they wanted him to do was say the term global warming or climate change. If you look at the family, he says, "You cannot hide my concern for the family, which is threatened perhaps as never before. Fundamental relationships are being called into question." So he was talking about that. so I don't know. You stop and think about the effect. If you were to go along with the clean power plan of the president, that is going to be so punitive on the poorest of poor people. Tony, you may not be aware of it, but we had a guy named Harry Alford before the committee that I chair. He's the National Black Chamber of Commerce. And he said that the president's plan will result in a cumulative job loss of 7 million for blacks and nearly 12 million for Hispanics. But went on to say, oh, the very poorest are the ones that are going to be punished. Well, that's got to give pause to the president and how he's going to address this.
You're listening to Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Senator Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma, my guest. Senator, a lot was said preceding his visit, kind of blowing up the issue of global warming, trying to heat up that debate once again. And as you've said, it may have fallen far short of what the left wished he would have said on that topic.
Well, no, clearly that's the case, and so they read into it. I had one person whose name I can't remember, MSNBC, interviewed me, and I found out later that she stated that she was watching me when the president made the statement about, which was just a very weak statement about the environment, and that I chagrined and I was, you know, not responding. And, you know, I couldn't even understand what he was saying at that time, because so I didn't know. So you're going to find not just individuals in the Senate who are wishing he'd say something, and therefore they're going to put their interpretation on it, but also members of the media who were anxious for him to say more than he said. And so they're going to put that interpretation on it. That's what's happened. I'm glad to see those people disappointed.
Senator, let me continue this conversation about the issue of global warming. That is a big issue of this president, or I'll use this term, climate change, that this is going to be a focal point for him in his last year and so many months left in office. What are you anticipating in the Senate in terms of what the president's going to try to push?
What the president's been trying to do is everything that he failed at getting done legislatively, he's trying to do with regulations. They're trying to do it right now. So yeah, he has two legacies. Clearly, global warming is one of them, and closing Gitmo is another one. So he's going to try to do as much as he can through regulations. So he has what they call the Clean Power Plan. That's his regulation that he's proposing. You might remember that over the years, you and I, since 2002, have been talking about what he's trying to do with global warming and the cost that that would be, and the admission by his own administration that if you pass this, it may be the largest tax increase in the history of America, but it's not going to reduce CO2 emissions worldwide. If you'll remember, it was his director of the EPA who, in response to my question, said, no, it would not reduce. What we do in the United States is not going to reduce CO2. So he's talking about now doing this through regulation, which would be far more expensive than the legislation that was proposed going all the way back to 2002. So I think, to answer your question, he's going to try to do through regulation what he has not been able to do legislation.
I want to ask you, Senator, almost out of time here in this segment, but I want to ask you about a vote that took place. The Senate pushing forward a continuing resolution funding mechanism. There was a vote to defund Planned Parenthood. That failed by 47-52 with 7 Republicans voting against that. Disappointed that the Senate did not move to defund Planned Parenthood?
Well, I was disappointed because but let me tell you something that surprised me. I was talking to Jeff Sessions on the floor right after, this has been a few days ago, and it seems when you talk to Democrats that maybe it's because they watch different media, but they're not even aware of what the atrocities that have taken place with Planned Parenthood, the allowing a baby to grow and mature so that their parts, when they dismantle them, are going to be worth more. I can't think of anything I've ever heard that is more offensive than that. So I was very disappointed that we didn't have the votes of some of the Republicans I thought we'd have. I knew the Democrats would go right down the party line. One of the things, the differences between Democrats and Republicans in the floor of the Senate is that Democrats are disciplined, Republicans aren't. Mm. And there's no better evidence of that than that vote that took place.
Senator Jim Inhofe, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon. As always, enjoy talking with you.
Thank you, Tony.
All right, folks, don't go away. When we come back on this weekend edition of Washington Watch, my good friend Joel Rosenberg joins us to talk about what's taking place in Syria, the impact that will have on Israel, and the interest of the United States. Don't go away. That's coming up on the weekend edition of Washington Watch. Fear not. If you've read the Bible, you've read those words. But have you ever paused to meditate upon their meaning? In almost every case where God spoke those words, it preceded something extraordinary being done through ordinary people. God told people like Abraham, Gideon, and the apostles to reject their fears because fear holds us back from experiencing all that God wants to do in us and through us. We can't operate in fear and in faith. Faith says advance, fear says retreat. Do you want to know how to live with no fear? That's the focus of my new book, No Fear, Real Stories of a Courageous New Generation Standing for Truth. You'll be inspired and hopefully challenged by the real-life stories of young people who are standing up for Jesus in an increasingly hostile culture. You'll also read the biblical accounts of those who stood for God in their day and learn how to stand in a way that honors Christ. Learn to live with a holy reverence for God, and you'll have no fear of man. For more information, go to TonyPerkins.com. Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, Tony Perkins. Glad to have you along this weekend. The website, TonyPerkins.com, you can find out more about today's guest, topics that we're discussing. Also, if you're not already receiving my daily update or the alerts that we send out here from Washington, D.C., you can sign up at the website, TonyPerkins.com. If you're on Twitter, it's at TPerkins. You can follow us to keep up with what's happening. All right, this week, a very important story that kind of flew under the radar with everything going on. U.S. officials confirmed Monday, this past Monday, that Russia has deployed 28 combat planes in Syria. On Tuesday, private satellite images revealed new construction of two Syrian military facilities near the Mediterranean coast, which signals Russia is planning to get more involved in the Syrian conflict. Now, the vacuum the Obama administration has created has given rise to the Islamic State in Syria. Now, Russian President Putin sees an opportunity to get more involved in the Middle East. Putin has also fully backed the Iranian nuclear agreement. Taking all of these actions by Russia collectively, it could have, and I have to say will have, a major impact on Israel, as well as it can have an impact on our security and energy policy going forward here in the United States. Joining me now with his analysis on this is Middle East expert and New York Times bestselling author, my good friend Joel Rosenberg. Joel, welcome to Washington Watch.
Good to be with you, and actually on this side of the world, in D.C. with you, Tony. How are you?
That's right. You're just fresh over from Israel over here. Actually, you were a part of the Values Voter Summit this weekend. And as always, it's actually good to see you face-to-face.
Good to be here.
In fact, I'm going to be with you here in next
Yeah, you're going to come over to our neck of the woods and spend some time and bring folks to Israel for the first Family Research Council tour of Israel. And we're just honored to have you guys come. And I hope it'll be I believe it will be a very special time.
And last time we were in Israel together,
yes.
We were in the King David Hotel.
Right.
As the red alert system was going off, as rockets were coming in.
You came with the National Religious Broadcasters Solidarity Mission in August of last year, and I was just so grateful. There was two delegations at that week, right?
You had only been there a week.
We just arrived on a Friday. Santorum and his pastor group came, I think, on Sunday. I think you guys got there Sunday or Monday.
Right.
And it was special. It was special to be with friends in our new country as it was under attack, and it really meant a lot. It's one thing to go to Israel. It's another thing to go, which we're not asking all of you to do in the audience, but for leaders to go and stand with Israel during a crisis, it sent a great message, especially as evangelical Christians, of our love for the people of Israel, both Jew and Arab.
Now, folks can't see this on the radio, but I'm having my iPhone here. I'm showing this to Joel, the picture on my iPhone. You know what that is?
Iron Dome shooting
down. That is the Iron Dome shooting down a rocket as I was standing on the border of Gaza and in Israel.
An amazing system. And fortunately, it's been fairly quiet, not entirely quiet, but mostly quiet. And, you know, I think the Israeli operation criticized around the world, but the Israeli operation did bring this fight to a halt. And so far.
So now that we've talked about all of that, let me see if anybody wants to go with us to Israel when we go next month. It's actually, I will tell you this. I've told people if everything is imploding in the entire world, the place I would probably choose to be would be Israel, because I know the future of that place. And I also happen to know and used to train alongside the military and the special anti-terrorist forces there in Israel. I used to train with them when I was with the State Department. And there's not any better.
This sends a message. I mean, we're in a small country over there. Yeah. And when Christian leaders as well as grassroots people say, we love you, we're with you, we want to understand you better, we want to know how to pray for you. I mean, it's one thing to stand with Israel, and there's another thing to stand in Israel.
That's right.
And it's pretty exciting that people are coming.
Well, I'm looking forward to it.
Is that closed out, or can people still sign up?
People can still. We still have a little bit of room. You can go to the website, tonyperkins.com, and follow the links over. And if you're interested, we'll make people squeeze over a little bit on the bus. No, we still got a little bit of room.
Well, I look forward to being with you guys for several days there.
And you're going to be
addressing
there.
The group, answering questions. And
which is going to make it pretty exciting to have you there with our tour group talking about the issues. Our trip's a little different than most trips to Israel in that not only are we taking in the Judeo-Christian heritage and the sites that are important to our Christian faith, but we're looking at the geopolitical environment. We'll be hearing from Israeli political leaders and others. In fact, we've got some of our own political leaders are going to be going on the trip with us. Bobby Jindal, governor from Louisiana, former Senator Rick Santorum is going to be joining us for a part of the trip. So it's going to be an interesting
trip.
Two
solid men who love Israel and love America, and it'll be great to be with them as well.
Well, before we run out of time here, I want to talk about these developments with Russia moving in to Syria. What does this mean with 28 Russian warplanes now popping up in Syria?
The short version, # it's not good.
Yeah.
I mean, it's been American bedrock foreign policy for 60 years to keep the Soviet Union out of the Middle East. And not only is the president of the United States cutting loose our allies and withdrawing and retreating, surrendering out of Iraq, out of Afghanistan, now he's allowing, almost encouraging, Russia to take our place. This is a huge problem. And look, here's the key, very simply. You have to understand the Russian leader, Vladimir Putin, is not just a former KGB guy. That tells us a little bit about him. But I believe that the way to understand him is that he's a czar. My family were Orthodox Jews that escaped from the czar in 1907 when Jews were being slaughtered, massacred. Czars are imperialists, and that means they need to expand the land and the power and the wealth of Russia. And Putin wants to move west, and he's been going into Georgia, he's going into Ukraine, and he's not getting a lot of resistance, not from NATO, not from the U.S. He wants to move east, and he's building this tie with the Chinese. He's making this odd bid for the Arctic because there's natural resources up there. But where's his main opportunity for advantage? It's to go south. And that's why Russia is working so closely with Iran, so closely with Syria. I believe that Putin is a new czar rising, and I think he is positioning himself not only to replace the United States, but to be a direct threat to the state of Israel and the Jewish people and to the Christians in that region.
And Joel, he's making these moves, I would say, clearly with the vacuum that's been created by America leading from behind.
Yeah. Well, look, when President Obama drew a red line and told the government of Bashar al-Assad in Syria, if you use chemical weapons, we will hit you militarily. Assad used chemical weapons. More than 1,000 people died, many, many more wounded, and the president didn't do anything. What he did do one thing, he let the Russians go in and theoretically help the UN remove all the chemical weapons from Syria. We now know that they weren't all removed. I wrote a novel, The Third Target, about them, the chemical weapons not all being removed, and what if ISIS captured some of those. That's supposed to be fiction. It's not that far from fiction at the moment.
Yeah, you have a way of doing that with your novels. They tend to come true.
I'm writing about worst case scenarios that could happen when you have failed leadership. We definitely have failed leadership from the president of the United States. And what's bad is that he, as you say, he's creating a vacuum by American withdrawal. And bad actors are moving into the vacuum. Iran, the Islamic State, and now Russia. And that is a very dangerous trio.
What does this mean moving forward? As you've laid out, you've got Putin has developed these relationships with the Iranians, with Assad in Syria. What does that mean future for U.S. and Russian relations?
Well, under, you know, we recall that President Obama was caught thinking that the mic was off a few years back, right, when he said, listen, he didn't say it to Putin. He said it to one of Putin's underlings. And he said, look, when I get reelected, I'll have a little more freedom and latitude, I think, or
flexibility.
Well, apparently that meant I'll have more flexibility to retreat and to have you guys enter. I mean, whether that's what he meant or he just his incompetence and naivete is creating that. You know, whatever the heart, we can see the fruit. And the fruit is that President Obama is allowing the Russian bear into the most volatile region on the planet. And this, again, this was bedrock bipartisan foreign policy against that since the Cold War.
Do you
and
see this?
This is just – and when you add to that this issue of what we've talked about in the past, although I'm not sure about on the weekend show, about apocalyptic Islam.
Right.
Russia is now, I think, inadvertently getting in bed with people who their Islamic faith – not everybody's Islamic faith, but the leaders of Iran, for example, they think they're supposed to bring about the end of the world. And Russia's arming them. And Russia's helping them go nuclear.
And what do they benefit from? Is it strictly an economic transfer?
It starts with cash. You always, you know, Bob Woodward's old line, follow the money. The Russians, they want the cash. So they started – the Russians started selling weapons to Iran as far back as the mid-1990s when the Soviet Union had imploded. And so it had weapons but no cash.
Right.
Iran had just been through the eight-year war with Iraq. It had – cash. It didn't have any weapons. So this was a match made in hell. But that was in the 90s. And then when Putin emerged in 2000, Putin added a new dynamic. We're not only going to sell arms to America's worst enemies. We're going to try to start to build alliances, not just military purchases, but we're going to build alliances to build a Russian empire in the Middle East and to counter American influence there.
All right, Joe,
I don't know. I don't think Putin gets the fire that he's playing with, but he himself is playing with fire.
Well, that's why I want to ask you a little bit about, from a standpoint of biblical prophecy. Do we see pieces coming into place here?
Well, look, I think so. I mean, certainly you have the rebirth of Israel and the Jews returning to the land. That's, you know, people. Even Christian leaders didn't think that was going to happen over 1,900 years, and now it has. But then you have two other interesting sets of prophecies. One is Ezekiel 38 and 39, what's known as the War of Gog and Magog. Without going into too much detail, and I've written several both fiction and nonfiction books about this, but the short version is the prophecy indicates that Russia, known in the Bible by its ancient name of Magog, that's the way the Bible had called it, and then Persia, which is the ancient name of Iran. They form an alliance with a group of other Middle Eastern countries against Israel in the last days. Now, are we there yet? I wouldn't say we're there yet, but the trend lines are amazingly consistent for a prophecy that hasn't happened in 2,500 years. Like, we've never seen Russia and Iran allied like this. So that's one. Or I guess that's two. You got Israel reborn. You got Russia and Iran forming an alliance. The third one is Isaiah 17 and Jeremiah 49. Both of those prophecies, separately, but I believe they're coordinated, talk about the absolute meltdown and destruction of Damascus. Now, Damascus is the oldest continuously inhabited city on the entire planet. And it and the country it is the capital of, Syria, is disintegrating before our eyes. We are watching the implosion of a modern Arab state. Now, the Bible says it will happen, But it's painful as a Christian, as a person, to watch it happen because it's creating death, destruction, refugees, traumas. I don't think you can put Humpty Dumpty back together again. I think that Syria is going to soon cease to exist as a geopolitical entity. And what we're watching is Russia and Iran try to figure out how to own it.
Right.
Maybe together or maybe just one of them. We'll see. But they can see the handwriting on the wall, a biblical term from Daniel. But they can see this country is over and they are moving to control it.
And America, through its absence of leadership, is facilitating it.
It is. And I think I'm concerned our own country is heading for implosion. I mean, you kill 58 million babies and we're close to hitting 60 million. If we hit 60 million abortions in America, that we will have killed 10 times more people than the number of Jews killed by the Nazis during the Holocaust. You can't recover from that. Judgment will come. Now, God could raise up a Josiah. He could bring a great revival, a great awakening, and forestall judgment. But that judgment, in my view, is certain.
Payday is coming.
Unfortunately,
and
when I look at all of this, I see America financially and morally heading for implosion. And then I see the world on fire and us retreating and the enemies advancing. And I look at the presidential race, which has so far been very unserious. But I'm not ready to pick somebody. But I'm praying for a Josiah. I need somebody who gets how to turn us around financially, fiscally, economically, and who understands the world and has the courage to protect us on the off chance that God is going to give us more time. Then we need a leader who's ready.
It's definitely a critical time in our nation. Joel Rosenberg, thanks so much for being with us today.
Great to be with you, Tony. Thank you.
And folks, I want to encourage you to pray for our nation. If there was ever a time that we as followers of Jesus Christ should be praying for our nation and for the peace of Jerusalem, it is now. And so I encourage you to do so. All right, folks, we're out of time for this weekend. Thanks so much for being with us. Again, the website, TonyPerkins.com. Until next time, I leave you with the encouraging words of the Apostle Paul found in Ephesians chapter 6. When you've done everything you can do, when you've prayed, when you've prepared, and when you have taken your stand, by all means, keep standing.
The weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins is a production of the Family Research Council in Washington, D.C. For more information on anything you've heard today, or if you'd like to find out how you can help support the ongoing efforts of the Family Research Council, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our new watch line at 1-866-372-7234.